You're listening to the Stress in the City podcast, a self-care resource for the busy and burned out. I'm your host, voiceover artist Brittany Nicole, and each episode, I'm breaking down adulting. Because what's more stressful than being an adult, right? I'll share the best books, methods, and tips to help us all figure out how to do this life thing better. Ready? Let's start the show. Welcome back, friends, to another episode of the Stress in the City podcast. And I'm really excited about what we're going to be discussing today because this topic literally affects everyone. It affects you. It affects everyone you know, everyone you interact with. And so I'm hoping that it will provide some insight and some value as it has in my life. So what are we talking about? We are talking about attachment. Now, I do want to say this is a huge topic, and I am not a therapist. I am not a psychologist. I am simply a human who is in relationships with other humans, and that is the reason that I took interest in this, to kind of, you know, improve my own life and my own relationships and heal from my own stuff. So I'm not approaching this from an absolutely clinical point of view. There is a lot of information about attachment, and I feel like it gets very confusing at times. And I feel like as certain topics become more mainstream, people start taking the original idea and calling it different things. And so it gets kind of confusing. So my point for this episode is not to explain every single thing that there ever was on attachment, but just to really highlight the key points. And, you know, again, like I said, because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, I'm speaking from my point of view. So I am hoping that sharing some of my insights and my personal experiences, just human to human, may be helpful to you. So let's get into it. What even is attachment? Essentially, and very, very basically, attachment is another bond with a person. And what attachment theory does, I think, at its best, is it gives us language to categorize the way we act in relationships, to identify patterns in the way that we connect with others. And I think that's really useful to know. Nobody is an island. And this is coming from somebody who, I was a self-proclaimed best lone wolf in the world. And I have to retract that statement. I am no longer a lone wolf. Having healthy relationships is a skill. Depending on your upbringing, having healthy relationships may come naturally. It didn't for me. So it's something that I think, regardless of, you know, whether you had a healthy upbringing or not, if you're a person, you need to learn relationship skills. And I think that this, you know, you don't have to sit and read every theory and every book that there is out there. But I do think it's kind of key to know, like, how do you show up in relationships? What are your patterns? You know, how do you connect with others? How do others connect with you? How does your upbringing play out in the relationships and the friendships that you have? Now, I feel like there's a lot of data there that you can use to improve your life. And also, you know, your ability to attach well or securely attach in relationships affects the health and longevity of the relationship itself. So that's why I'm choosing this as something to break down. So let's start from the top. Mainly, there's secure attachment and there's insecure attachment. What is secure attachment, first of all? So secure attachment tends to happen when we, whether it was our parents or whoever our caregivers were that brought us up, were reliably there for us in every way. They were there for us emotionally. Our physical needs were cared for. We were in a safe environment. The relationship was supporting and loving. And, you know, maybe you felt like it was safe to be vulnerable with your parents, or you wouldn't be scolded for sharing, you know, your day or your feelings or whatever you're going through in school. You felt like your words matter. You felt like you could be heard and understood. And generally, as you go, you know, went about your life then, and as you go about your life as an adult, you have a sense that the world is a safe place and that people are safe and that love is safe and that relationships are safe. I struggle with describing that from the standpoint of, like, imagining that as an upbringing, because I can't relate to that at all. And it took me a long time as an adult to even conceptualize that something like that existed. So, secure, one of the main topics. The other main topic, insecure attachment. So what does that look like? This is where our parents, our caregivers, whoever took care of us growing up, were not reliably there for us, either emotionally, physically, or both. And our needs were not met in a consistent way. Now, this can look like a lot of things. This can look like big T trauma, like physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, you know, neglect, abandonment, having a parent or caretaker who is an addict of some sort. Or this can look like smaller T or little T trauma, which is, you know, not ever being allowed to, not having the line of communication open, not being allowed to voice your own thoughts and opinions, and, you know, maybe being shamed for that or not being encouraged to do that. Not ever having a sense of validation or not ever being agreed with, or even, you know, you were not allowed to be upset. Or if you were upset, you did not have a place to go to be soothed. And so that manifests or can manifest itself in your adult life as some form of an insecure attachment style. You may get the message and have the programming in your mind that relationships are not safe, people are not safe, you need to protect yourself at all costs, because that is kind of the way that you, you know, in your formative years, that's the message that you received about the world, is that you have to take care of yourself, you have to protect yourself, because probably nobody else is going to. So this is where it gets a little bit confusing, because there's all these different, like, subcategories of insecure attachment. And there's only three that I'm going to focus on, because based on everything that I read, I feel like whatever words are used, it's still the same thing. The three types of insecure attachment, according to me, who's not a professional at all, but anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, and then I like the language that's used for disorganized attachment, which is essentially a combination of both anxious and avoidant. So let's talk about those separately. So what they have in common, though, I do want to state, is that with anxious, avoidant, disorganized, at the core of the fear that this person may have is a fear of being abandoned, but they respond to that fear in different ways. So an anxious attachment, they, you know, might have a fear of being abandoned, so they cling desperately to whoever they're in a relationship with, whether that's a romantic relationship or friendship. They may be prone to being more jealous, have more separation anxiety, tend to be more people-pleasing and give up parts of themselves at the expense of maintaining this attachment. And then there is avoidant attachment, which, you know, also there's this underlying fear of abandonment. But the response to that fear is to avoid getting close to anybody in the first place. Can't get abandoned if there's nobody there. So, and then with disorganized, there's a push and pull between both. I want to be close, but I want to be independent. I need a lot of reassurance, but also I need a lot of space. So it's a combination of both. Now we're going to get into these a little bit further, but I want to talk about how our attachment styles may show up in relationships. And when I say relationships, I'm talking about friendships, familial relationships, romantic relationships, just relationships, period. And then I also want to talk about specifically how our attachment styles show up in sexual relationships. So let's start with relationships in general and secure attachment. So what are relationships that are securely attached, what do they look like? Now, I also want to be clear that, sometimes when I think humans like patterns. And I think that we especially like personality types, or maybe it's just certain types of people like me. We like categories, and we like to be able to, organize our life and understand our life in categories. And I don't want to send the message that one thing is perfect and the other things have no value. So I want to be clear when I talk about secure attachment in relationships and secure attachment in sex, and to say, like, these are not perfect people. These are not people who have no problems. That doesn't exist. Relationships that have a secure attachment, it's more about the ability to repair connection when things have gone wrong, the ability to work through issues, to communicate. Relationships that have a secure attachment, the people in that relationship feel like they can depend on one another. They feel comfortable being depended on. They have a healthy perception of themselves and healthy perception of other people. There's trust in the relationship or the friendship or whatever type of dynamic there is. People with secure attachments feel comfortable developing new friendships and new relationships, and they have good boundaries. They're not, too rigid where nobody can come in and it's always a no, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the nuance is, or, it's also not too permeable where, you have a boundary and as soon as somebody pushes your boundary, you're like, okay, fine. It's a healthy mix of using discernment and honoring themselves. And they can also honor other people's boundaries without taking things personally. I think that something that I have seen a lot and experienced with learning how to set boundaries is that a lot of times, people who are not comfortable setting their own boundaries are not comfortable when you set boundaries with them. But a person who tends to securely attach when they have a boundary set, when they're on the receiving end of somebody telling them no or setting limits on them, they're like, okay, that's fine. I understand. I respect that. I was probably 28 when I realized that was even possible, that having that kind of relationship with another human being where, you can ask for help and you can set boundaries and you can, just in general have a sense of well-being about the relationship without fear, I had no idea that that was even a concept until, like, I was almost 30. Now, it's a standard. It's a standard. But that was not – that was something that I had to truly, like, go to school for and get a degree in because, I mean, I just wasn't taught those skills. I just wasn't in it, around that kind of environment. I felt like those kind of things only happen on TV shows with actors. Relationships with humans, to me, were fraught with stress and distrust. And for that reason, I was very avoidant of relationships. Like, I have a much better time in my own company than dealing with people who stress me out. So I'm not going to deal with people. I think that was really behind a lot of my, well, I'm definitely still introverted, but I realize now that a lot of what I thought was introversion was truly social anxiety. But I digress. Speaking of anxiety, actually, that's a good segue for our next point, which is about anxious attachment and how that shows up in relationships. When I talk about anxious and avoidant attachment, I want to emphasize, like, there are things that are struggles for those who attach anxiously, avoidant, or a combination of both that may not be a struggle for somebody who attaches securely, but it's not all bad because some of these things that they struggle with are the very things that make them really good friends or really good people. And I know, you know, there's a couple of people that I can think of in my life that I don't know for certain, but I have a suspicion that they tend to have these tendencies, and they're just, like, the kindest, most generous people. And so I want to kind of honor that when I talk about these categories. So with anxious attachment, they tend to worry more about the relationship or have insecurities in the relationship. Like, you know, they're not the feelings that they have for this friend or partner or whoever are not shared. And that can show up in being overly helpful, giving too much. And, you know, they may find themselves feeling like their relationships are not reciprocal, that they may not prioritize their own needs they will prioritize other people's needs above their own, I should say. They tend to maybe overanalyze conversations and situations and have a lot of doubt about things that they said or they should have said. This is where I think you'll see a lot more people-pleasing. But on the flip side, these are people who tend to be very friendly, very accepting, super caring, generous, you know, very thoughtful, very reliable. And it's almost like a gift and a curse in a way. You know, they have the ability to anticipate other people's needs and feelings. And so that makes them really have a lot to bring to the table. But because they are inclined to overgive, they don't let themselves receive in response, or they don't feel that they're worthy of that reciprocity. So let's talk about avoidant attachment styles as well. In this category, you tend to see a little bit more independence. And it can look like independence, but at the root of it, it can really be emotional distance because of that fear of, I can't let anybody close to me because they're going to hurt me. Even though, you know, deep down inside, there is this, like, actual desire to be close to people and to have connection. But the fear is greater than the desire. And the message that they likely got growing up was, you know, they may go long periods without talking to their friends or, you know, having real connection with their partners. They may be more comfortable having surface level friendships because they feel safer. There's less vulnerability involved, you know, with people who are not going to get as up in your business. They may be good at supporting other people or giving other people advice, but not so good at, you know, asking for help or being vulnerable or receiving support. I think some good points, though, are the self-sufficiency in relationships, I think, plays out in, one, acknowledging that because you need personal space, other people probably need personal space, too, and being able to respect other people's boundaries without taking it personally. And I do think that being able to self-soothe and emotionally regulate is also a skill. Not to say that only emotionally avoidant people are able to do that, but they have a little bit more experience with self-soothing because they had to, based on whatever their, you know, environment was growing up. And speaking personally, this is the category that I find myself mostly in. I thought I was comfortable with setting boundaries, but I realize sometimes instead of setting boundaries, I just avoid them. I just avoid the people who I need to set boundaries with. So, yeah, I definitely tend to be more like, I'm not going to deal with that because it's too much. That tends to be a pattern that shows up in my relationships. I'm just glad that I've gotten to a certain point in my life where I can at least acknowledge my patterns. And I think that's the work. You know, nobody gets through this life without having stuff to carry. Nobody has zero bags. And the work is not necessarily about like getting to the point where you're perfect and you don't have any problems and you've resolved all your issues and you don't have any baggage anymore. It's like knowing what you carry and having some tools. So, I didn't really go into detail about the disorganized part because essentially it is both of those things. You may have people pleasing and then you may have extreme independence. You may have, you know, please have your personal space because I need my personal space. And then you may have, I need all the attention in the world and I need it now. As a combination of both. So that's relationships, friendships, familial relationships, and attachment styles. But I'm harking back to a couple of episodes ago when I was doing a review of the book Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, because there was a section on sex and attachment that I thought was really, really interesting. And I just wanted to bring that part back on this episode since we are talking about attachment and share some of the facts that came up. There was a study done in 2012. If I can find it, I'll link it in the show notes. If you're that nerdy that you want to read the study like I did. There was a study done in 2012 which reviewed the relationship between sex and attachment. And in this study, they're not talking about, you know, anxious, avoidant, fearful, dismissive, blah, blah, blah. They're just talking about secure and anxious, from what I can recall. And so there were some key takeaways in that study, some key differences between what sex looks like in relationships where they reported that they had a secure attachment or in versus relationships where they reported that there was an anxious attachment. So in the secure attachment relationships, they were reported to have the healthiest, most pleasurable sex lives. They had more positive emotions during sex, more frequent sex, higher levels of arousal and orgasm, better communication about sex and consent. They were more likely to have sex in the context of a committed relationship and more likely to feel a link between sex and love. In the study, the anxiously attached partnerships were more likely to engage in what the book referred to as solace sex, which they described as soothing but unerotic, like a way of getting close to your partner that soothes your fear of abandonment and your fear, you know, that there's issues in the relationship. But it's not, you know, it's not truly a sexual experience. It's like a comforting experience. They also reported more difficulties with safer sex practices. They were less likely to use condoms, more likely to use drugs, and had higher rates of STDs and unwanted pregnancy. They were more likely to be involved on either side of a coercive relationship. They have more one-night stands and more positive attitudes about sex outside of committed relationships. So I thought that was just kind of interesting to show that, you know, attachment is not necessarily, you wouldn't necessarily think of it as something erotic, but because it affects relationships, it affects all parts of relationships, including the sexual part. So it's important. That's my point, is that attachment is important. So what can we do to work toward developing a secure attachment? Because not all of us have it. Not all of us were fortunate enough to experience it, but that doesn't mean that it is impossible. And it doesn't mean that it's something that you will never experience. So, you know, and attachment styles can change. Also, I don't think I said this, but, you know, your attachment style may vary from person to person. It may vary from dynamic to dynamic. You may have a tendency to be one or another, generally speaking, but, you know, it's possible to have friendships that are securely attached and romantic relationships that are not. It's possible to have, you know, family relationships that are securely attached and friendships that are not. They can vary from person to person and they can change. And that's actually a good thing, because that means if you weren't fortunate enough to be brought into an environment that allowed you to develop a healthy sense of self and a healthy sense of, you know, relationships with other people, that you can learn that skill. Relationships are not, they don't, good relationships don't just happen for no reason. It's a skill that can be developed. So how can we do that? What can we work toward? Another thing, actually, while I'm on this topic, I want to say that, you know, more important than identifying what category, you know, you fall in, what kind of attachment you have, and what are your attachment wounds? Like, there, if you want to go down a rabbit hole on this, you really can. I've done it. I have definitely done it. Up to you whether you decide to go that route or not. But if you ask me, I think more important than identifying the patterns and feeling like you have a category that you can put yourself in, like, I get that gives you a sense of direction and a sense of safety, because that's what it did for me. But I think the patterns that you really need to identify are what were your relationships like in your formative years? What were those patterns like? Ask yourself those questions. Did I feel like I could talk to my mom? Did I feel like I could talk to my dad or whoever raised you? Did I feel like they would listen? You know, when I cried, what happened? What was the reaction? Was I told not to cry? What, when I was happy about something, did I have someone to celebrate and validate that I did a good job and mirror that back to me? Those, I think, are more important than saying, what's my attachment style? I think attachment styles are helpful because attachment theory and the language around attachment styles, I think, are helpful because they give us the words to be able to understand our experience better, because that's a big part of it too. How can I describe what I experienced if I don't even know the words to describe what I experienced? So I do think it's a helpful tool. I just would not encourage getting so caught in the categories as if that's the answer, as if that's the work, because it's only a part of it. The work, I feel like, you know, and I'm fully aware not everybody is going to be able to do this, but this is not easy stuff. This is not easy stuff. And so I highly recommend a good therapist, somebody that, you know, you can trust and that who is well-trained and who that and that is truly caring. My therapist has been absolutely invaluable to me, the best money that I have ever spent, and it hasn't been as expensive as I thought it was going to be. So I think that that's really an important step in being able to work through these very difficult, deeply buried psychological programs that we have in our minds. You go to the doctor when you need an adjustment for your back, right? Go to somebody for your mind, you know? So I see people always talking about working with your inner child and doing inner child work. And I don't know, something about that just doesn't sit with me. But I do think there is something to the concept of reparenting, which is basically teaching yourself the interpersonal skills that you didn't learn growing up. I heard this quote before, and I'm probably not going to say it exactly correct, but it was something like, parents parent us the way they were parented and at the level of consciousness they are at while raising you and whatever resources they had while they were raising you, you know, and that may not have been all you need. That may not have been enough. So doing some work to think about what is it that you, if you can look at yourself as a child from your vantage point as an adult, what is it that you would have done for that child? You know, that's reparenting to me. And some of the ways that I have done that is by building a support system. I started developing close relationships later in life. Like I was a person in high school that had like four friends all 4 years. Those were my people. That was it. And I was like, I am not hiring for friends. These are my friends and that's that. And I'm still kind of like that. I've gotten a lot better, but I have to say developing a support system of people that you trust, that you can talk to, that you can set boundaries with, you know, invaluable, like therapists and then good friends. So that is not something that is necessarily easily done either, especially, I know that especially as somebody who struggles with social anxiety, somebody who's very introverted, somebody who tends to be pretty avoidant. So it's not easy. But maybe just one, maybe just find one friend. I'm going to put some resources in the show notes too. There's a girl, Vanessa Van Edwards. She has this lab called Science of People. And I have, I used to watch a lot of her work to try to help me develop my people skills and my relationship skills. And I do, I feel like she, had some good information. So I'll share that in the notes. Learning to play. Man. That sounds stupid. I know it does because it sounded stupid to me when I was introduced to the concept. But when I think about it now, I tend to be somebody who doesn't take breaks, who will work and work and work and not eat and like and feel good about that. I'll feel like, yeah, like I'm killing it. And I think we kind of live in a society that encourages that too, which is not the healthiest thing. But something that I've learned is that I am actually sharper when I am not constantly working on something, when I'm not constantly troubleshooting or analyzing or trying to fix a problem or trying to fix myself. Like, just taking time out to do something purely for pleasure. purely to have fun or laugh or whatever it is that's enjoyable, that is, it actually makes me more effective. It actually makes me more effective to not work all the time. That is not a good recipe for accomplishing things. Self-soothing is another skill. Learning to identify my emotions. I'll go through this process with myself where if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'll ask myself, what am I feeling? I'm feeling overwhelmed. Why am I feeling overwhelmed? Because I have all this stuff that I need to do and I didn't sleep that well and I'm hungry. And then I have like a list of things that I can do to soothe myself or, you know, give myself a little bit more resources in the moment to be able to deal with whatever I'm going through. If I'm overwhelmed because I have all this work to do and I haven't slept well and I haven't eaten, well, then there's something I can do right there. Let's take a break and let's get some food and revisit trying to work on whatever I'm working on. Learning communication skills. Ooh, man. This deserves a whole episode in and of itself. But I just want to say on this episode, when I say learning communication skills, what I mean is learning how to communicate your thoughts and your feelings, but also learning that people are communicating their thoughts and their feelings from their point of view and not yours. So communication skills is in part communicating, but it's also in part listening. And that is something that has to be learned and practiced and mastered in order to have relationships that are as fulfilling as they possibly can be. So I could probably talk for another hour on reparenting. Maybe I need to have a reparenting episode. Let me know if you'd be interested in that, because I have a lot more to say on this topic and I've already said a lot. But the last thing I want to point out is boundaries. Learning how to set boundaries, learning how to accept when boundaries are set. I heard this quote. Dang, I can't remember where at all it was from, but it was something to the nature of setting boundaries is, it's a very vulnerable act because you are asking people to see you. You are defining yourself from the rest of the world and you're asking to be seen. And that's why it's difficult. And, you know, anything that's difficult may not necessarily come naturally. So I think this is something that can go very far in learning to develop a secure attachment and learning to have better relationships. Ba-dum-bum, the end. So that is all I have to say at the moment, but I am really on a soapbox. So let me know what you think, actually. If there's any of the topics that I've discussed in this episode that you would like to hear me talk about a little bit more, and I would be happy to go into that. But I want to thank you again so much for listening today, and I will talk to you soon, friends. Bye. So that's it for this episode, but our fun doesn't have to end here, friends. The after party is on Instagram. You can follow me at It's Brittany Nicole. I'd spell it out for you, but it's in the show notes. And I post a lot more self-care content. I post some of my voiceover content there, so come and hang out with me there. And if you're loving Stress in the City, please leave a 5-star review. Lets me know that I should keep going, and the encouragement is always welcome. So thank you again for listening, and until next time, friends.